When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Nothing better than taking the train into the friendly confines of Wrigley Field. We've got football.
Northwestern had their first two drives. They dictated the tempo, and then a blocked punt turned everything around for Ohio State. They score 31 unanswered points. Clean game from Will Howard. Running game got going. 2 yards difference between those two backs, and we saw some big plays from Jeremiah Smith.
History made on that kneel down. Indiana is 10-0.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score. Man, it's going to be a fun weekend in college football. It is every weekend. We're delighted to welcome in Jake Butt to the program. He joins us on the Aturo Hotline, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. You see him on CHSN and the Big Ten Network. Great college football analyst. Jake, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Listen, I'm delighted to be with you guys and talk some football.
Yeah, we are really pumped up because we've been talking about it all morning. And I can't get away from the feeling that everything that's going on with the college football playoff rankings and the way they're releasing it, it's just setting up what's going to happen at the end of the year.
Chaos.
I don't know. Should there be 4 Big Ten teams? You would think so. Should there be 4 SEC teams? It looks that way, but what if they got a 3-loss team? And then all of the kind of storylines that stem out of that from all over the country. It's just a fascinating thing. You would think the 12-team playoff would make it easier, and it seems like it's even more complex.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. It's like, you know, we started with the BCS National Championship, and that had its issues. So we expanded the 4-team playoff. That has its issues. So we go to the 12-team playoff, and now in a few years we'll probably have like a 16-team and then an 18-team. There'll be a 100-team play. The whole season will be a playoff in 20 years from now, most likely. So, one thing that's interesting, though, is it's – okay, we talk about the college football playoff, but – the change also comes at a time where now we're in the world of NIL and transfer portal. And one really interesting thing that's come out of this, where it kind of plays into the debate of how many SEC teams will we get. You know, when I was playing back at Michigan, there was huge talent discrepancies. I mean, we had good teams at Michigan, but you look at the teams that ultimately won the national championship, like Alabama or Clemson back then, they were loaded with talent. They would have 4 and 5 stars in their 3 deep on their bench. Nowadays, because of the NIL and transfer portal, the best teams can't hoard talent. So that's why Georgia has a tough schedule this year. If this was Georgia a few years ago, it wouldn't matter. They'd run over everybody. But now talent is being dispersed across the country, which has led to the most parity we've had, at least as far as I can remember, in the college football level. And that also adds to the drama at the end of the season.
Great example is Indiana, that Kirk Cignetti comes in year one and has put together a team that nobody expected to be 10-0 at this stage. So, Jake, I ask you this. You have seen the Hoosiers, and you know they've got a huge challenge to beat Ohio State this weekend. If they lose that game, some people will be like, well, told you, they're not really all that. But I wonder, what do you think of the Indiana Hoosiers, even if they are unable to beat Ohio State this week, in terms of their viability to be in that 12-team playoff?
I actually think there'll be some people that think that. I think most people are tired of hearing from the SEC and they're tired of seeing the SEC. I'd say the overwhelming majority of people feels Indiana has done enough to deserve to get into the playoff as it stands right now. Now, I think the fair thing to say is, one, I actually think they could beat Ohio State. Okay, I'll start by saying that. I think they could beat Ohio State. I don't think it's going to be easy. I think if Ohio State plays their best game and Indiana plays their best game, Ohio State will win. Okay, that's just the program difference there. But I think no one plays their best game, and Indiana can pull it off. Won't be easy. But the other question is what does it look like if they do lose? Does it look like Ohio State's in a completely different class then we could start to have some questions. And then that's when the debate's really going to pick up. So for Indiana, they have to play their best game of the year. It's going to take that just to keep this one close. But certainly if they want to upset Ohio State, but man, they're going to want to keep this one close if they want to keep that debate alive.
You know, it's fascinating because there's all sorts of different ideas and different suggestions going around. I saw Joey Galloway yesterday on ESPN said that he thinks Curtis Rourke should sit out the Ohio State game. That if you believe, it sounds like it's ridiculous. Only what happened with Florida State last year when their quarterback got hurt?
It is ridiculous, but I understand where he's coming from.
If you lost your quarterback, and he didn't play in the second half against Nebraska earlier in the year, and they won the game anyway, but if you lost him, like Florida State lost their quarterback last year, does that mean that a one-loss Indiana doesn't get in? Would the committee look at it that way? That's the problem with all this stuff. And then Lane Kiffin said he's talked to coaches in the SEC, and they've all said they don't want to play in the championship game because if you lose that game, now you got three losses, you don't get into the 12.
It's another reality I hate, Jake, but it's a reality almost.
How the tables have turned, though. Listen, like it's. I'm 29 years old. I'm supposed to be part of the new generation that sits out of bowl games and does all this stuff. And here I am about to beat my chest saying, no, you play the games. What do we mean? Joey Galloway's, he's a legend. He came before me. He's not supposed to be talking about sitting out. No, I think Indiana can win this game. Kurt Cignetti, he's not cut from that cloth, man. Curtis Rourke, he's not cut from that cloth. Go, I'm telling you, just you got to watch some Curtis Rourke film, man. He's the truth. He is a real big time gamer. They can win this game. I'm telling you right now. I don't think it's, you know, it's not likely, but they can win this game. And man, you're telling me you're going to get to the, I understand the conference game a little bit more. So if you guys pull up, if you look at the playoff bracket, you know, let's say everything goes according to plan and Oregon has a rematch against Ohio State. Okay. The winner of that game will be the number one seed. They'll get a bye. The loser of that game is probably the second best team in college football. Mm-hmm. That's going to be bumped down to the 5 seed because of the auto bids. So in terms of like value, you have a 2 seed that's rated as a 5 seed. That 5 seed in the current rankings would play BYU at home and then play Boise State for a chance to go to the semis. That's a very favorable path. So if you could sell me on anything, I could understand a team kind of maybe, you know, taking it easy in the conference championship to try to get a favorable matchup, favorable line of sight there.
All right, Jake, I know you focus mostly on the Big Ten, but you're fully aware of Notre Dame and what it's done this season since losing to Northern Illinois. 8 straight victories. I think they're averaging 42 points a game. Help us put Notre Dame's season in perspective as it pertains to the playoff, and are they a viable national championship contender?
Oh, that last question's tough because initially I'd say no, but when I look at some of the advanced statistics like EPA per play, their offense and defense is top 15 in both of those categories. So that's really, really impressive. And since that NIU loss, they've been absolutely dominating teams. I think their defense can keep any game close. That defense is really talented and can keep any game close. To me, they're capped by what they can get from Riley Leonard. I'm not sold on Riley Leonard as a quarterback that has earned the right for me to bang my fist on the table and say that's a national championship level quarterback. But he does some nice things running the ball. Like he can lead them to some wins. This weekend it's another weekend that's gonna reveal a lot because Army does some things that are really interesting. You know that they got that quarterback that can Bryson Daly. He can run around. He can throw it around. Like these types of games against the service academies really stress your fundamentals. So I still want to see Notre Dame finish this season out. Even a game against USC. That team's much more talented than their schedule. I still want to see Notre Dame play a few more games before I'm saying for certain that, you know, they're going to go ahead and make a run at a national title.
So I think one of the things that I love about what's going on is, and I agree with you, I think we're all kind of burnt out on the SEC, but one of the questions out there is, why is Tennessee the bubble team and not Ole Miss? You know, is it worse to lose to a 5-5 Arkansas team on the road or a 4-6 Kentucky team at home. You're now measuring losses, and then you get to Penn State, and their best win is against 6-3 Illinois. And I love Illinois and their program, but they're 25th in the country. So you start trying to measure these teams, and I always thought that the strength of schedule was the most important element, but when you have all these super conferences now, is it more valuable a loss against an opponent from within your conference? Is there going to be a three-loss team in this 12? I guess that's where I'm going.
I know. I wish if I had a crystal ball, I'd tell you. You know, I really would. I'll say this. You know, just for all the crap I give the SEC, I get it. Trust me. I mean, that Georgia schedule this year is absolutely brutal, and it's a gauntlet. And do I think Indiana would have the same record as Georgia? No, I don't. I don't think Georgia might be the only team to have the current record that they have. But listen, that's just the way these things shake out. And you have to protect the integrity of the process. If we start saying, oh, well, Georgia should be in based off of fairy tale metrics of who we think would win, you erode everything. Then there's no need to play any of the games. And the other issue I have with some of these three lost teams, like, you know, had Georgia lost to Tennessee last weekend, you know, we'd be talking. Right. That's where the conversation was really going to heat up. You make sure your house is in order if you're going to be saying that, because here's Georgia getting smoked by Ole Miss. They've looked shaky against Kentucky. They've looked shaky a number of times this year. If you're perfect, then I can start to, you know, I can start to understand some of the other arguments. But how shaky they've looked. Like, it's not Indiana for their schedule. They've dominated every opponent. Here's Georgia against a very average Kentucky team looking extremely shaky, among other games on their schedule. That's where I'm hesitant, because that tells me anyone can beat Georgia on any given week.
We're talking with Jake Butt from the Chicago Sports Network and also the Big Ten Network, college football here on The Score. Jake, when you look at the 12-team format and you look at the 12 teams that are currently ready for the playoff, and whether it's today or with the final bracket, how many of those 12 teams do you think legitimately will have a chance to win it all?
Yeah, I think really from the Big Ten, you're looking at really pretty much the only teams that can win it all is Oregon and Ohio State. And even though Oregon beat them, I feel more confident in saying Ohio State. Now, I will say there's a huge injury news coming out of Columbus. They likely lost their center for the season, and they already lost their left tackle and then had to bump out their guard. They got issues on that offensive line. So it's one of those two teams. And then of the current bracket, I really think it's Georgia, Alabama, Texas, I'm hesitant to say, because they really haven't beaten anyone. Crazy. I know their schedule is shaky, and Ole Miss. It's going to come from those two teams in the Big Ten, Oregon, Ohio State, or one of the four SEC teams. I don't think anyone else can actually win it.
Great stuff. I got to tell you, I look at this and it really fires me up, because this is, you know, like I think a week ago, Notre Dame would have been at Tennessee. Now they're home to Alabama. Like, it's just, I think that might be worse than being at Tennessee. It's just so hard.
You'd rather play what you consider a lesser team on the road than have a better team at home?
That's what I'm asking.
I don't know, Jay. I think I'd want the home game.
I don't know either. I don't know. I really don't know. I wish that we don't know. This is the whole point, though, is this is a completely new chapter of college football. Like, a few years ago, you could say that for sure, but now there's every team's talented. Even a team like Boise State, like Ashton Gentry is so talented. He solves problems. Many have tried to tackle him. Many have fallen, Oregon included, right? So, like, anyone can really win on any given day. And one thing that's interesting here, too, is the home playoff games really make this interesting, because all of a sudden, right, rather than having playoff games in the South where the weather's going to be nice, you might have to go up say Georgia plays Penn State, Georgia's going to be a heavy favorite until it's snowing outside and Georgia realizes they can't run the ball, right? Like, anything can happen. So who knows, guys? I wish I had some certain answers for you. I don't.
Jake, unrelated to the 12-game or 12-team playoff, Illinois has really had a strong season under Brett Bielema. I can remember Brett being in here in the summer and having conversation, and basically this was a big year for him. I think he needed to show what they have shown. Why do you think they have had the kind of season they have?
Him, Luke Altmaier, pretty much. That's it. And I think their defense has done a great job of taking the ball away. And why? Really, let's just give Brett credit. Like, let's take a second to give Brett Bielema credit and recognize the job he's done. And he's a damn good coach. And I think a lot of programs would be lucky to have Brett Bielema as their coach. The funny thing is normally they win through trench play, like dominant trench play. They don't have dominant trench play this year. That's the sign of a good coach in terms of his ability to adapt. They're winning by quarterback play and great receiver play. You give a ton of credit to Brett Bielema.
You know, Colorado is still alive, although the quarterback's going to Dallas and the father is going to go coach him there. I mean, there's just so many funny things going on around college football and rumors connected to the NFL. But, you know, these automatic conference bids, I'm not sure how good some of these teams are, and I'm not sure who's going to be able to close it out. I mean, there have been some shocking results, and
no, I know.
We'll see.
I know that's the number one thing that I think that discussion is going to heat up. BYU's not making a run. I'm sorry. Miami's not making a run. Even though what I said about Boise State, they're not played in the national championship. And in terms of leverage, the Big Ten and the SEC have all the leverage in the world going forward. So I'd expect them to continue to strong arm this process to try to, you know, gather up more and more picks.
So, Jake, before we let you go, please indulge us, because we are both big Jim Harbaugh guys and wanted the Bears to go after him last year. You played for Jim Harbaugh. You have to be enjoying what he's doing with the Chargers. And I guess what kind of insight can you lend into helping us understand why he is such an effective football coach and what he meant to you during your time at Michigan?
I don't want to rub it in, but the conversations, the feeling you guys would have waking up on a day-to-day basis if Jim Harbaugh was the coach of the Chicago Bears would be night and day from how you probably feel right now. You're not having a dude fight with the crowd against the Commanders if Jim Harbaugh is the coach. We'll start there. That's not going to happen. The other piece is look at the Chargers game last week. Like, there's the fork in the road of who the Chargers were versus who the Chargers are. They were up big. The Bengals come back. And if you're a Chargers fan, you're thinking, oh, my God, here we go again. And then what happens? And I was listening to J.K. Dobbins talk about a clip where he knew the Bengals were going to let him score. And the right thing to do was to slide down, you know, slide down and just let the clock run out. And he asked his center and his coach, and he said, no, they all said, go score. Go score, because communicate to the world that this is not the same old Chargers. That's what Jim does, is he instills belief. I don't know if you guys see the videos from the locker room. Jim instills belief from top down in organizations that you will win, that the page has been turned. More than anything, that's what Jim does.
Absolutely.
Yeah, wow. I know.
Thanks,
that's so
Jake.
Good. That's good stuff. Jake, yeah. Thanks a ton.
Good
great,
stuff, Jake.
Great talking to you. It's an unbelievable subject. I cannot wait. It feels like it's just setting up.
Yeah,
it's going to be great. I don't know what.
Appreciate you getting up, though, Jake.
Thanks, guys.
That is Jake Butt from Chicago Sports Network and, of course, the Big Ten Network, and he does a great job.
He does a good job. Football. He's definitely plugged in. He's in the booth. He's in the studio. Does a good job wherever he is.
And congratulations to Illinois, by the way. Did you see that yesterday they got – they're back in the top 25, right? So you got the football team 25th in the country. The basketball team is ranked, and the women's basketball team all ranked at the same time.
Josh Illinois. Whitman's got things going the right direction down in Champaign.
Getting it done.
There's no question.
Good stuff. A lot of fun. My mind is boggled by this thing. I'm really curious to see.
It is complex. I want to address the thing that I'm getting Dustin pointing his finger at me. I want to explain in further detail why what we talked about, Indiana's options, what Joey Galloway kind of broached in terms of whether or not to sit the quarterback Saturday against Ohio State makes sense or not.
Dustin claims he doesn't know who you are. He's David Hall. You're listening to Molly and Hall on the Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Score.
Honestly, if we believe in what our metrics are saying, if I'm Indiana, I don't know if I'm playing Rourke against Ohio State. We've seen what happened to Florida State last year, Jordan Travis. What could keep Indiana out of this? Getting their quarterback hurt. We've seen it happen to Florida State last year. Not played anybody.
Or losing so by 30.
If you look at 3, 4, and 5, Texas, Penn State, and Indiana, they literally have played nobody between all three teams. The toughest team in that is Vandy. So a lot of this that we're looking at is eye test because – Boog, when you look at the resumes of 3, 4, and 5, it brings back the idea of let me not play anybody and be undefeated.
Yeah.
And be in a good position.
I agree with that.
The eye test is going to matter because 3, 4, 5 have played nobody, and that includes Indiana.
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the Score. That is Joey Galloway on ESPN suggesting that maybe the best way to go would be for Indiana to rest their quarterback in the game, make sure he doesn't get hurt against Ohio State. I mean, that's not going to happen. And in fact, I would imagine that Indiana believes they can beat Ohio State.
I'm sure they do.
And they're going to try to beat Ohio State.
I'm sure they do.
But that is just an interesting comment by him because of what happened last year with Florida State.
That's the context. And I think that, yes, college football ideally is more about the journey than the destination. It's all about the experience. It's all about what you do over a four-year career or whatever the case may be. Not everybody has to win a national championship. Not everybody has to be in a 12-team playoff. That is certainly the majority of the people, more than the majority. Over 90% of probably student-athletes go to play college football, and it's because of the experience. And that's who I am. That's what I think people are, and that's you benefit from that. But Joey Galloway is just speaking to what is the reality about professional sports. And let's face it, big-time college football, the 12-team college football playoff, is professional sports. You get in, you get $4 million. You win a game, you get $4 million more. You win again, you get $6 million. You get to the final, it's six more. These are
That's just for the school, right, for each school?
Yeah. These are professional athletes who are now in NIL agreements that they're going to pay the Michigan quarterback $10 million a year next year. They're going to set that aside. These are professional athletes. This is a professional operation. So we're figuring out exactly what that means to different people, and everybody in every program is going to interpret it differently. But how is what Joey Galloway is suggesting different than, may say, the Chiefs resting Patrick Mahomes with the 17th week of the season or the 16th and 17th week, whatever the case is, to preserve him for the playoffs? And in this case, you're preserving what Galloway is suggesting, your quarterback, for the playoff. I don't agree with it. I wouldn't condone it, but I do understand it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's, you know, Dustin was surprised that you said it that way, but I do think that it's an interesting conversation because it's not going to happen. I think they're going to try to win the game, and I think that they will have a shot at winning the game. I don't think Ohio State's going to lose the game.
So there's a problem there. But if it takes hurting the quarterback, I think they'll try to do it. I don't think there's any way that they won't try to win the game straight up and ruin their perfect season. And I think they can take something out of this if they play close enough. But because of what happened last year, I think it's a legitimate argument to have. I think if it were to happen, then I think we would condemn it. But I just think it's an interesting thing.
I would criticize it, and I would not be in agreement with it.
Right.
But the conversation is natural because some coaches might lean in that direction. Kurt Cignetti is not one of those coaches.
No.
He's a guy that believes that he can beat any team in the country, and he's the guy that, as he woke up this morning, believes that Indiana can win the national championship.
And he got paid. He got paid like
got
a week ago.
$8 million a year contract.
Nothing for him to worry
extension,
about.
Extension. So he's playing with
house money.
A lot of security. And so he's going to make decisions based on that security. I don't think that's a decision he would make because he's not that kind of coach.
Right.
He's the kind of coach that believes anything is possible. He is very similar to the belief that we just talked to Jake Budd about Jim Harbaugh instills in his football team, his football program, his football organization. Wherever he is, people believe in him because of the power of his positivity. So I don't think that's going to happen, but it is a fascinating discussion, as is Lane Kiffin's. As is Lane Kiffin's.
Well, I think that's a little bit different because that's you know, that is not – something that you can determine. You don't want to lose a game. You're doing everything you can to keep from losing. You just don't want to play in the championship game, which is different than not wanting to than not minding a loss. You want to avoid a loss because you want to be in it's more important for you to be in the 12-team playoff than it is to be in the SEC championship game. You would rather win a national title or have a spot in that outfit than actually winning a SEC title. I find that interesting, but I understand that one a lot more because it doesn't take a loss to get it done.
Yeah, conference championship games have, I think, reached the point of diminishing return.
Yes.
I don't believe that they are serving the purpose they were intended to serve any longer.
Right.
And this is one of the examples of how and why. They're money grabs. Right.
Yes.
Now.
Yes.
And they're also, when you look at it in the context of what we previously were discussing about the risk to injury, they're things that coaches would like to avoid, I would imagine.
Oh.
Unless you're a really big surprise and you say, you know, when Northwestern was playing, for an example, in the Big Ten championship game,
right,
that was an opportunity they don't experience
normally get
very often.
Yes.
But if you are a team that is in traditionally a top 10, top 20 team, an SEC team, then I think you look at those conference championship games not as opportunities, but you look at those as obstacles almost.
How much do you get paid for being in the SEC title game as opposed to $4 million for being in the first round of the
That's a good question. I don't know if it's as much per
it can't
school.
Be as much.
It certainly is lucrative for the conference,
yes,
which is why the conferences love these things.
Yeah.
So money grab means, when I used it in that context, it was more about the conferences created these manufactured championship games, in air quotes, because they were basically money grabs.
So what's fascinating is that yesterday they finally did the math again. They finally figured out that Oregon has basically insured themselves a place in the Big Ten.
How did it take this long for them to figure that
that's
out?
That's where I was going.
What?
Shouldn't they have known that the minute the game ended on Saturday?
I want a sports mathematician to weigh in if you're listening. 312-644-6767. Tell us why it took until now to figure out that Oregon is the number one.
Oh, by the way, they
is going to be in the conference title. And also, tell me how they got to 1 in 68 million that the Bears had the odds of losing all six of the games they lost after they had a 90% chance of winning. I want a sports mathematician to weigh in on both those things.
Okay, but if they weigh in on it, it doesn't make it any easier to understand. I think that it's the problem.
I want to see the math.
With math.
Do your math in the back of the envelope. I want to see the math.
See,
Show your work.
I'm sure there's a reasonable explanation for the math of it, but that doesn't mean you're going to be able to do it without a calculator.
Everyone's got a calculator now on their phone.
I know.
We have a calculator. I can calculate.
Do you use it?
Sometimes.
How often?
Once a month.
I would guess that I use the calculator feature once to four times a day.
What are you calculating?
I'm calculating stuff all the time.
On your calculator on your phone?
On the calculator on my phone is one of my favorite.
Give me an
apps.
Example of what you might be calculating throughout the course of any given Mully day.
Like, tax on something that I bought.
Okay.
And why it seems so much more than I anticipated. I will go through different bills and.
That's got to be food because I know you don't buy clothes.
I don't buy clothes, which is nice. But I did recently purchase a jacket.
Okay. So hold on. Let me do the math here.
It ended up being a little bit more expensive than I thought it would be, just by a small percentage. I also, I will do a lot of like little sports calculations with different.
So the White Sox lost 121 games
example.
Last year. And if they lose 12 games per month, I mean, really?
No, I will.
Three, four times a day?
I'm literally on the calculator app quite often.
I am not.
I don't do as much math in my head as I used to. and it's I'm a better man for it.
So you have to drive 200 miles. And
I am making a trip? I am making a trip. I'm shooting down to the U of I today, and I had to figure out the calculation of
miles per hour.
Well, the time it would
take.
And really more like what time do I have to be out of there to try to avoid some of the downtown traffic.
3 hours down, 3 hours back.
Yeah, it's probably I mean, just from me and the
These
way
are
I
calculations
drive,
that
is probably
typically
closer
you can do
to
in your head.
247. I just said I'm not doing as much math in my head these days. I like having the calculator.
I think that's great.
Yeah,
it's not one of my more popular apps that I'm using, but I think that it's there for your disposal.
I'm just saying I like to take a look at it. I like to make sure that I'm following some of the stuff going on around me.
Well, I would like somebody to calculate. Or tell us how they calculated and waited till now Oregon is in this championship game.
Why did it take so long to figure that out?
I don't know.
Yeah. It's a good question. I'm not sure why. I mean, I get it. There's a lot more teams in the Big Ten, but it didn't. Is it just a matter of figuring out that I would think that you would have that math done before the game started and you would just plug it in
with all the people? And you know how your conference has expanded? I think that, that's an interesting little sidelight to learn. But I'm sure there are valid reasons
for
that.
How do you not use your calculator more? Are you some math genius I don't know about?
I do a lot. I work out a lot and like by hand. I do
Yeah,
that.
I do some of that too.
I don't know. I don't use
I always double check my math though. Because I don't, what's really weird is like when my kids were growing up and I was trying to help them with their math, my way of like doing division is no longer the way they teach. So as I was attempting to show them my work.
How do you do division?
They couldn't. I do it like a guy that grew up at Tommy Moore in the
19. Well, how do they do division then?
It's just different. They do it like it's longer, it looks like.
There's nothing more exciting than math on radio.
I wish I was better at math. I used to be much better
riveting.
At math.
Hold on, let me.
You're the one.
Carry the one.
Who wants a mathematician to explain things to
I would
him.
Like somebody to explain it because
he's got
that's.
Caller on line one.
Okay.
Can we get it quick? All right. Don. No.
Don. Hey, Don.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I think I can explain this. So let's go with like a coin flip. The odds of you calling a coin correct are 1 in 2.
Right.
But if you wanted to call it correct 4 times in a row, you got to go 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 4 times, which is really hard to do. So the same with these games. If their odds of losing those games are like 1 in 100 and there are 6 of them, you're basically multiplying 100 by itself 6 times. That's where you get the gigantic number from, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, that doesn't help me at all.
1 in 68.
I'm more confused.
Million.
So
So it's 4 times 4 times 4 times 4. 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 times 2.
There's an exponential part of this that's difficult.
16 times 4 times.
They said there would be no math.
Yeah. All right, let me get my calculator out.
312. Here. Math is more exciting than Cubs or Sox talk.
Why are you leaving the Bears out?
All right, let's talk hockey.
All right. Well, you don't know hockey. We're going to talk to Chetley next. Molly and Haw on the Score.
Chris Chelios. Up the boards to Chelios with room. He shoots. Score! BetMGM ambassador.
Nice play by Chris Chelios.
Hockey Hall of Famer.
Chris Chelios is not human. I'm convinced of it. Not only will he go in the Hall of Fame, I think he should go in the Smithsonian.
Blackhawks legend.
Chelios will add defense, but he'll also add offense to the Hawks.
Steve Smith ahead to Murphy. Nichols at the line. Chelios moving in.
Time Stanley Cup champion.
What a competitor Chris Chelios has been over the years, and he's been a winner every place he's ever been.
Chris Chelios with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always fun to talk to our favorite Bet MGM ambassador, Chris Chelios, and all guests on The Score. Brought to you by Arturo, your all-weather tire, Arturo.com. Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing all right.
We're doing okay. I'm just curious. I mean, I know you were a defensive player technically, but did you ever go 10 games without scoring a goal? Seems like you scored a lot of goals. What's going wrong with Connor Bedard? How does a guy – that's got to be the longest drought of his life.
Yeah, well, I'll answer the first part of that question. I actually went 40 games without scoring a goal one year. And that was, I don't know, it was my second year in Chicago, so that was kind of a tough time. And I don't know, for whatever reason, the more you push and the more you try, the worse it got for me. But somehow I was able to get out of it. But in Connor's situation here, last night, I mean, I love the fact that they put him on the wing. Less responsibility gives him more of a chance to be offensive. And Dickinson's very responsible. You saw he had a really good game scoring 2 goals, and he knows where to go when Connor gets a puck. But whereas Connor was thinking shot, you know, shoot last year and always looking to shoot, now he's, you know, whether it's frustration or, you know, people are, you know, players, other teams are paying more attention to him. I mean, last night he only had 1 shot on net, you know, which I was kind of surprised. But he's always looking to make the pass now. And if anything, I'd like to see him just start shooting the puck more, and it'll open things up and help the other guys. But anyway, he's not playing bad. He was a +2. Their line obviously is the most effective line last night. But they, you know, they just didn't have that. They were flat. They're very, you know, no emotion, no passion in that game. And what bothered me the most was they're getting out hit like 16-4. You got to play physical. You got to create turnovers, and they just didn't do that last night. For whatever reason, coming off that road trip, they were dead flat.
Good to see you last night, Chelly. I think that when you look at Bedard moving to the wing, it's understandable because he has gone 10 games without a goal. But I wonder, how long does this last? This isn't where he's going to stay, is it?
No. I mean, I think he's competitive, this kid. He's focused, and he'll figure it out. And, you know, I think he's getting the message from it. It's hard to tell those types of players how to play. They see the game differently when they're on the ice. And, you know, he's got the shot. But, again, there's no depth on that team yet. You know, there's not another, you know, centerman that could match up against the other team's top lines. So that's got a lot to do with it, too. And I just refer back to my playing days when at the end in Chicago, it looked like I was done. You know, we'd lost Roenick. We'd lost Belfour. We lost a couple other key guys. And I was at the end of my career, and then I got traded to Detroit with a lot of depth, and all of a sudden I was back, you know, finishing second in the Norris trophies and you know, plus 40. So they got to get some help for him, and it's coming. You know, I watched that kid last night in Rockford, the highlights, and Azar, you know, had a good game. He's another small player, probably a poor man's DeBrincat, but, you know, they got to get some of these young kids and their development, and hopefully it's quicker than later, you know, later. Get these guys up to help him out and free him up from others, you know, the top 2 defensemen on the other team.
Yeah, Chris, I'm thinking of a very famous quote from, I believe it was Michael Scott in The Office. He hung it up. It says, "You miss 100% of the shots you don't take, Wayne Gretzky." But he quoted Wayne, so he took credit for it.
Yeah, well, again, it's true. And it's hard to believe, you know, guys, they're not drawing penalties because they're not, you know, driving the net. They're, you know, there's opportunities to get it to the net. It's just, you know, it's pretty simple. You go back to the basics. Someone drives the net, and you just throw the puck in the net. And right now, Connor's thinking pass. I mean, obviously. So he's got to get that mindset of shoot first, pass later. And again, I'm still pretty happy with the game and the line, what they did last night. He was a plus two, which is good, which it takes a lot of burden off him, and that you're trying to go 200 feet every time, you know, being back as a centerman and having to be responsible defensively.
I know a guy who played into his late 40s might not be impressed by 39-year-old Alexei Ovechkin leading the NHL in goals, but that's something.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I think he just sustained an injury. Hopefully it's not a bad one, but he came out of the gate this year again, and it looks like he's got a pretty legitimate shot, depending on what this injury is, of breaking Gretz's record. But, yeah, I mean, he's been one of my favorites. I love the way he played. He's not quite as physical as he used to be, but he has, you know, it's the total game. And, again, Washington's right in the mix. They're a team that, you know, they're on the bubble for the playoffs, but he's great to watch. He's coming in soon, I believe. Washington's coming in pretty soon in December. So looking forward to that. He did that game where he tied the record. He had that hat trick that one game. It was pretty exciting. I got to call that game. So always been a big fan of Ovechkin, but kind of, you know, mixed emotions about him breaking Gretzky's record. I never thought that'd be done.
Chris, we'll let you go. You think your Bears will win against Minnesota?
Oh, my God, what a heartbreaker. But, you know, they played a good game and, you know, they stopped them on that 4th and 6th. And I thought, you know, LaFleur would have been crucified if the Bears would have won for that. But things are going. The only thing I can't understand still is why they're not throwing the ball to Kmet. They threw it to him 3 times. Twice was for first downs. I just don't get it. It'd be easier on Williams. But let's move to Minnesota. It's going to be another close game. If they play that same game, I think they're going to come up with a win.
Thanks, Chris. Have a great one.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, guys.
Mully and Hall on the score.